In 2002, the art collective Madeleine Plansker went on a cultural exchange trip to Cuba. That's the only way you can visit Cuba if you're from the United States. And she returned to the U.S. with a number of works by Cuban photographers. When she revisited the island, she sought out more photographers and added to her collection. And now Ms. Plansker has published a book of photographs by 50 Cuban artists who are almost unknown outside of Cuba. The Light in Cuban Eyes is published by Wake Forest College, and today an exhibit of some of the work is opening at the Robert Mann Gallery on West 26th Street in Chelsea. Ms. Plansker joins us now, along with two of the exhibitors, Nelson Ramirez de Arellano Conde. He is an artist and director of Fototeca de Cuba, and photographer Alejandro Perez Alvarez. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madeline, what was the art scene like in Cuba when you first visited in 2002?
It was very mysterious because there was no map to follow. If you were lucky enough to meet someone who knew about an artist, if you asked, they would say, "I'll take you." But there was not, it was a very underground art scene.
But today, it's quite different. I know some people
Absolutely.
Who went, and there are tour guides who know the names of all the artists. They say, "What kind of art do you like? We'll take you to their studios."
Well, in 2007, when I went back, I went in 2002 and then in 2007, I was able to meet with La Fototeca de Cuba and to meet Nelson Ramirez, and the journey got a lot less difficult.
What struck you about the photographs that you bought on your first trip?
What struck me was that people were talking at this point in 2002, the photographers were talking about the freedom they had, that you watched them, they were out in the street. They weren't photographing a parade or a speech. They were photographing life and sometimes their own bodies to describe what life meant to them. So the art was intimate. It was intriguing.
Nelson, in an essay you wrote for the book, you say that collecting Cuban photography is not easy. Why is it so difficult?
Well, there are many difficulties, actually. One of the very first is that Cuba has been isolated from the United States, so for an American collector, having access to Cuban artists is not that easy in many ways. I mean, you don't have a gallery that represents Cuban artists normally in the States. You have the difficulty of traveling to Cuba from the States. You need a special permission, a license from OFAC. And then when you get there, you don't know exactly which is valuable, who are the artists which are actually important or not. Now the situation is changing, and many of these things are a lot easier, as you said before. But at the time Madeline started coming to Havana, it still was wasn't that easy, I guess.
What about equipment? Everybody knows that the cars in Havana are, 40, 50 years old, but kept in beautiful shape and painted wonderfully. Do you get more equipment, more contemporary equipment? Are the photographers working digitally these days?
Well, there are not many choices, actually. It's very difficult, even today in New York, it's very difficult to find silver gelatin-based paper and negative, and real negative. So, I mean, photographers in Cuba, they have been forced to move to digital, either they like it or not, because accessing the traditional materials is harder and harder every day. Then there are not many companies producing them anymore, like Kodak closed the Kodak plant or whatever long ago. But also it's difficult for us to have access to those materials. I mean, we don't have a camera shop where we can go and buy whatever we need. We depend on our friends, people like Madeline, who can bring those equipments from abroad.
Alejandro, when did you first start taking photographs?
I think like 6 years ago. I'm a graphic designer, so I received this information about how to work with the forms, and I started to make pictures 6 years ago, seriously pictures, I think.
Can you talk about your work? Your photographs in Madeline's collection are of the LGBT world in Havana. That is still a relatively hidden world, isn't it?
Yeah, the picture, main picture is going to be on the show is a piece from a work I have about Cuban transsexuals and Cuban drag queens. The name of the series is The Silence of the Body. Madeleine has many, several pictures of that work on the book. Even that's the picture is going to be on the show.
Is that world more open now? I remember speaking many years ago to Reynaldo Arenas, the novelist and poet who had to leave Cuba on the Mariel Boatlip because he was imprisoned for being a homosexual.
Yeah, I think the times are changing. Now I can believe that the Cuban sexuality, I think sometimes I say that it's reborn. Because, as you say, on the 90s was the different things. Now you can find, for example, night gay clubs from the government. That was impossible a few years ago.
But, Nelson, there still are restrictions, aren't there? After we have our conversation, we'll be discussing the case of the performance artist Tanya Bruguera later in the show. She was arrested and isn't allowed to leave Cuba.
I have to say something about the homosexual community in Cuba and so on. It is true that at some point there was 5 years from 68 to 73, there was some kind of official censorship or discrimination for homosexuals, but still we never had a law that actually prohibited being homosexual. So,
well, Reynaldo Arenas told me, he's no longer alive, but he told me that somebody, he was already a well-known writer.
Yeah,
a colonel came to his home and said, stand up and walk across the room and then come back. He did that, and the colonel decided he was gay just from that, and they sent him off to a re-education camp.
Well, that's something different.
I'm not holding you responsible for that.
I know. But at some point, I think it was 64 or 65, they started this kind of a program, obligatory military service. And the very first people who were sent to this military service for a period of 3 years were mainly homosexuals and people that the government considered that they needed to be re-educated, you know.
Madeline,
it's not the same being in prison that being, you know, in the military service. So it's a small, slightly different.
Actually, it's because different things, I think. It's a different point of view. Even that's one important thing. My work about it is not to try to say something very specifically. It's just about the experience and just my perspective to the lives and all this time. But I'm not trying to say anything about it.
Madeline, can you talk about the variety of subjects and styles that you have in your collection of Cuban work?
Yes. I think that what attracted me first was photographers using the use of light, whether they were using it outdoor or indoor, that they were still working in silver gelatin, which was fabulous because it was changing in the States, and they were still honoring this incredible tradition. And the first photographers I met only worked that way. Actually, until 2007, nobody had digital. I'm a landscape and person collector. I mean, I like the image, the human form, and also the form of the landscape. So when I was looking, that played a big part in what I was looking for, and there's a good balance, I think, in the collection between body form and the street photographer, the photojournalist.
My guests are Madeline Plonsker, who is a collector of photography, Nelson Ramirez de Arellano Conde, who's an artist and director of Fototeca de Cuba, and Alejandro Perez Alvarez, who is a photographer. The two photographers are included in a new book called The Light in Cuban Eyes, it's published by Lake Forests. This is a collection that is in Lake Forest?
No, actually, at the moment, the collection resides in my home, and I've put it up so that traveling museum groups that are coming through Chicago can have a chance to see 20 years of Cuban photography from the time the Soviets abandoned Cuba and left it and to this present day.
This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Nelson, that time is what has been called Cuba's special period?
Yeah, well, a special period was after the Russians disappeared from our life in 89. It was special because it was like a war situation. Even when we don't had any bombs falling or shooting in the streets, the country was not producing anything, so we couldn't sell anything to earn money as a country to buy the very basic needs that you need, like oil to produce power or chemicals to help with the farming.
The Soviet Union had been propping up the Cuban economy.
Yeah.
And now that was no longer, that money is no longer coming in, and you weren't able to sell things to Russia the way you had to
exactly.
the previous
yeah,
Soviet
the whole,
Union.
The whole socialist bloc, I mean, they had a kind of a exchange agreement, trading agreements, and the whole economy of Cuba was based on those agreements. So once that disappeared, Cuba was left alone, and it was helpless. So we had a very bad situation. People were really starving, and we start calling them at the very beginning blackouts, but then after you have a blackout for 3 days and you have 6 hours of power, you stop calling them blackout and you call the moment when you have light, like moment of enlightenment.
Now, Cuba is particularly photogenic because of the architecture, the way people dress, the colorful old cars, but a lot of the photos in this book are in black and white.
I think, being a collector of works on paper of the 20th century, that my husband and I first, 54 years ago, began collecting the master artists of Europe. And a lot of the most intimate work they were doing was always an etching, a lithograph, a drawing, and it wasn't in color. Early Chagall wasn't in color. Early Picasso was not in color. And especially on paper, we were drawn to light and shadow and the way you can go from gray to black to white. So for me, with this collection, I had no choice when I went to Cuba. There was no color. Hmm. I think you'll notice the first is 2007.
And now, of course, tourists come back with color pictures because they have their phones
right,
that only take
right.
yeah. color
but,
photos.
But those are photos and not photography in the sense of art.
Alejandro, are you able to make a living as a photographer these days?
As I told you, I live like graphic designers at the same time. Even I teach on the graphic design university in Cuba, so I try to make both things at the same time. And trying to include in my work as a photographer all these things about my formation with graphic designers.
Well, I've been told that because of the oddness of the Cuban economic system, that a tour guide or an artist, a photographer, is much more likely to have a comfortable life than a teacher or a doctor who is on a fixed salary.
Unfortunately, it's still like that. I mean, they recently raised the salary of medical doctors, for example, and the government is trying to also help scientists. But, since you are an artist and you have the opportunity to sell your work abroad, if you are really successful, if you are good enough, then you earn real money compared to the money that the people in Cuba can earn from the government.
Do you think that things are going to change as far as artists are concerned if we wind up with normalization of relations between Cuba and the United States?
Well, things are changing already in many ways.
But the rules remain the same, don't they? Americans can't go to Cuba as tourists unless they go as part of a cultural exchange group.
I know, but they're more relaxed. And now American companies can make contract with Cuba, like Netflix signed a contract with the Cuban government. I heard also that Apple is at some point start selling Apple products in Cuba, which is going to be very new for us in many ways. So things are changing, and Cuba is also, as a country, the government is putting a lot of effort in trying to develop technology and information like internet, and it's going to be released for everybody very soon.
How important is it for an artist, Alejandro, to know what's going on in the rest of the world. Are you able to know what photographers are doing everywhere else?
Yeah, even actually about this change, I think that this shows is a proof that something changing. That's why we are here. And yeah, internet is like the way to find infinite information about everything. And actually, this city is a powerful city where you can feel this energy, and you can find different ways. You can find many photographers, many works, and that's why this is a moment to receive all this energy and all this information that is going to go inside our works.
But internet access is still limited in Cuba.
Yeah, it's still limited, but we hope that some things,
changing very soon. We see many signs that it's going to change in the next 2 years. I think Cuba will be probably a normal country regarding internet.
You make photographs with your wife, Ludmila. How does that collaboration work, Nelson?
Well, it's more or less like cooking. So,
but you do the chopping.
It may happen that someone, one or the other, could put a little bit more salt, and then it's not tasty anymore.
Your work has been shown around the world, including at the Venice Biennale.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's a huge privilege to show our work at the Venice Biennale.
Do you think of yourselves, Alejandro and Nelson, as Cuban artists or just as photographers of the world?
I don't see the difference. I think photography is one of the many tools that an artist can choose. And in a way, I think you can be an artist doing whatever you do. I mean, if you like if you're very good doing your radio show, you're an artist of the radio shows.
You're the director of Fototeca. Is that kind of like the Getty Images of Cuba?
It is something like that. It was originally part of the National Museum of Fine Arts, and the museum is at the moment it's 100 years old, so it's a very old museum. And photography started very early in Cuba, and I mean only 6 months after it was released in the world, technology photography, we had the first daguerreotype made in Havana in March of 1840. I mean, countries like Austria, it took them 2 months more, and a country like China had to wait 4 years to have the first daguerreotype made in China. So Cuba is one of the pioneers, and we had in the 19th century a collector who was already collecting these photos, El Conde de Lagunilla, and all these collections were part of the National Museum of Fine Art, and when Fototeca split from the museum, we inherited that rich collection, which we holding our archive.
Madeline, the book is published with the support and permission of the Cuban Ministry of Culture. Was that complicated to arrange?
I felt it was necessary to arrange because there had been a book written and there was no ask, and the writer was banished from entering Cuba for 10 years.
And you didn't want that to happen to you.
I did not want that to ever happen to me, so I went immediately to Nelson. We felt the book should be bilingual, and we brought it to the Ministry of Culture, and they agreed to the project, and it became less complicated.
Just one more thing. This book has a lot of photographs from your collection. How many of them will be at the gallery, the Robert Mann Gallery in Chelsea?
Robert juried the entire collection. And he asked each artist to send their portfolios. Some of the work for sale is from the book, an addition, part of what I have. And some of it's new work and some of it's work that is not in my book, just a different portfolio from an artist in the book. So it's a wonderful opportunity to see more than what you would see in my book. There's much more.
Thank you all so much for being on our show. Madeline Plonsker, whose book is The Light in Cuban Eyes, her collection of contemporary Cuban photographs, published by Lake Forest College. And it is a gorgeous book, beautifully printed. Among the photographers included are Nelson Ramirez de Arellano Conde, who's also the director of Fototeca de Cuba, and Alejandro Perez Alvarez. Thank you all so much for being on our show.